Good morning. My name is Kent, and I am a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona, reading this morning from the print edition of the Wall Street Journal for Thursday, April 10th, 2025, and beginning, as usual, on page one with What's News. What's News, Business and Finance. U.S. stocks soared after Trump announced a 90-day pause on some tariffs and signaled a willingness to negotiate on trade. The S&P 500, NASDAQ, and Dow rallied 9.5%, 12.2%, and 7.9%, respectively. The volatility in financial markets threatened to derail Prada's talks to acquire Versace from fashion conglomerate Capri Holdings. Fed officials highlighted the risks of longer-lasting inflationary pressures from tariffs when they agreed to hold interest rates steady at their meeting last month. Delta Airlines abandoned its full-year financial outlook, a move that could serve as a harbinger for reports from other carriers this month. Formula One, which Liberty Media bought in 2017, has been shopping a rights package at around $150 to $180 million a year, beginning with the 2026 season. China's auto sales rose sharply in March, assisted by government subsidies and relatively muted competition in pricing. Volkswagen vehicle deliveries rose in the first quarter after gains in North and South America, as well as in Europe, compensated for a steep decline in China. 7-Eleven's owner projected a rise in annual profit as it continues efforts to stave off a takeover attempt by Couche-Tard, the Canadian owner of Circle K. The European Commission said it wanted to develop a network of AI gigafactories to help companies train the most complex models. And what's news worldwide? Trump walked back his steep levies on nearly 100 nations that had taken effect just hours earlier, a reversal that sent stocks soaring, despite the president announcing simultaneously that he would raise tariffs on Chinese imports to 125%. Republican leaders postponed a vote on Trump's budget plan after a handful of hard-right conservatives argued that it didn't lock in enough spending cuts. Defense Secretary Hegseth secured new commitments from Panama, but left some officials there wondering if they were enough to mollify Trump, who has vowed to take back the canal. The Trump administration was revising its plan to impose steep port fees on Chinese-built vessels to lessen the impact on U.S. exports. Judges in New York and Texas have placed temporary guardrails on President Trump's use of a wartime law to deport some alleged Venezuelan gang members to El Salvador. Germany's chancellor-in-waiting clinched a deal to form a new coalition and now must persuade Germans that he can fix the economy and get immigration under control. And more than 150 Chinese citizens have joined the Russian military to fight against Ukraine, according to Ukrainian intelligence reports viewed by the Wall Street Journal. And that's what's news. And we'll stay on page one for the lead story in the paper this morning, entitled Trump Pauses Reciprocal Tariffs But Hits China Harder. It's written by Gavin Bade and Annie Linsky. Dateline, Washington. President Trump walked back his steep tariffs on nearly 100 nations that had taken effect just hours earlier, a shocking reversal that sent stocks soaring, even as Trump announced simultaneously that he would raise levies on Chinese imports to 125%. Trump said Wednesday that his 10% baseline tariff on virtually all imports would stay in effect, but he implemented a 90-day pause for the higher so-called reciprocal rates he had announced a week earlier on nations the administration viewed as bad actors on trade, except for China. In an early afternoon social media post, Trump wrote that he had raised the tariff imposed on China to 125%, effective immediately. An administration official said that Canada and Mexico would remain exempt, for now, from the 10% baseline global tariff. While America's neighbors remain subject to plans to impose 25% tariffs on most imports to the U.S. for what Trump says is their role in fueling the fentanyl crisis, an exemption is still in place for these levies on autos and many other goods compliant with the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement. At the 4 p.m. close, the NASDAQ roared ahead 12%, the S&P 500 added 9.5%, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average moved 7.9%, or 2,962 points higher. Trump said that he decided to pause the bulk of his reciprocal tariff program because of growing concern about the economy. They were getting yippy, Trump said when asked why he had enacted the temporary rollback. They were getting a little bit yippy, a little bit afraid. The move opens up a 90-day sprint for trading partners to offer Trump deals to reduce their tariffs. Nothing is over yet, Trump said, adding that somebody needed to take the steps that he took to rebalance global trade in America's favor. He said many countries had come forward to make deals with the U.S., including China. China wants to make a deal, said Trump, who added that the Chinese were proud people and were determining how to make a deal with the U.S. The reversal on tariffs shocked even some allies close to Trump. It was a big-time surprise to a lot of people, said Senator Jim Justice, Republican of West Virginia, a longtime Trump friend, adding that, I love what it's done to Wall Street. Some Democrats criticized the rapid swings in U.S. policy. Trump is creating giant market fluctuations with his on-again, off-again tariffs, Senator Adam Schiff, Democrat of California, wrote on X. These constant gyrations in policy provide dangerous opportunities for insider trading. Who in the administration knew about Trump's latest tariff flip-flop ahead of time? Did anyone buy or sell stocks and profit at the public's expense? Trump, an avid consumer of cable news, told reporters that he watched J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon's interview on Fox Business on Wednesday morning. During the interview, Dimon said a recession was a likely outcome of the new tariffs, but defended the idea of tariffs as a way to improve trade. He urged Trump to give Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent time to make deals. I'm taking a calm view, but it could get worse, Dimon said. Also Wednesday morning, Trump posted on Truth Social, in all caps, this is a great time to buy, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. The about-face was greeted with glee by most Senate Republicans, many of whom were at a caucus luncheon when Trump announced the pause. The reaction in the room was positive, said Senator James Lankford, Republican of Oklahoma, who added that the pause sounds like good news to me. In the aftermath of any decision, many Republican senators suggested that imposing tariffs and then pulling them back was the strategy all along. The president is a master negotiator, Senator Bernie Moreno, Republican of Ohio, said. But some of the more vocal critics of Trump's tariffs weren't so sure. I'm not sure this was gamed out, said Senator Tom Tillis, Republican of North Carolina. Whether or not this was in the playbook or a reaction, I don't know. The surprise over the tariff shift appeared to extend to U.S. Trade Representative Jameson Greer, who is testifying in front of the House Ways and Means Committee when Trump posted the announcement. Democrats on the committee then demanded to know if Greer knew about the shift ahead of time, and if so, why he didn't mention it during his hours of testimony. Greer responded that he was aware of discussions on a tariff pause, but wouldn't divulge any more details about his conversations with the president or the rest of the cabinet. Senator Bill Hagerty, Republican of Tennessee, a close Trump ally, said he met Wednesday morning with Greer, but that the trade official hadn't mentioned plans for a tariff pause. Hagerty stressed that he found that laudable, as Greer wouldn't want to get ahead of the president. Trump said Wednesday that he was watching the bond market closely as he decided to pause the reciprocal tariffs. The bond market right now is beautiful, Trump said, talking to reporters at the White House. I saw last night where people were getting a little queasy. Trump's tariff delay announcement upended the bond market. Longer-term yields, which had been surging based on generalized fear about the fallout from tariffs, were down after his announcement. Yields on short-term notes, which had been relatively stable, shot higher, reflecting a sharp decline in the prices of the bonds. That was welcome news to lawmakers such as Tillis. You take a look at Treasury yields, things were not moving in the right direction, Tillis said, and some things could have combined for a really unpleasant outcome. Hagerty, who helped negotiate a trade deal for Trump as his first-term ambassador to Japan, said he had heard from many governments keen to strike economic pacts with the president. Trump likely will have a high bar for such deals, Haggerty said, saying that foreign nations should be ready not only to reduce their own tariffs, but cancel their non-tariff barriers to U.S. products, making commitments to buy U.S. exports, and outline plans to invest in U.S. manufacturing. The pain is not over for U.S. businesses, Trump's tariff critics said. They said that lingering uncertainty over the tariff agenda would continue to prevent businesses from making long-term investments in new factories. You're certainly not in an environment where capital is going to be moving until this is settled, said Tillis, who added that smaller retailers are going to be really stressed until we get the China situation worked out. And still on page one for the next article, entitled, This is a Great Time to Buy. Tariff Pause Sparks Historic Rally. It's written by Alexander Osipovich. Investors had spent nearly a week dumping everything American when, 7 minutes after markets opened on Wednesday, the president posted on social media that it was time to buy. By the day's end, U.S. stocks staged a historic rally after another Trump post announced a 90-day pause on some tariffs and signaled a willingness to negotiate on trade. Wednesday's surge added a record $5.1 trillion in value to the market. The afternoon gains brought welcome relief from turmoil triggered by President Trump's own shocking announcement of sweeping tariffs a week ago. Still, in the same Truth Social post, he further escalated an economic conflict with China, the world's second-largest economy. The stock market is still down from where it stood before the April 2nd announcement. And the president's trade war, which has consumed Wall Street's attention for weeks, appeared far from over. I just don't believe this is an all-clear signal for markets, said Christopher Smart, managing partner of Abroth Group, a geopolitical risk consulting firm. There will still be a bumpy road ahead with a lot of uncertainty around tariffs. All three major stock indexes ended the day with moves unseen since some of the most volatile stretches in recent decades. The S&P 500 jumped 9.5% on Wednesday, its largest one-day percentage gain since the financial crisis of 2008. The Dow surged more than 2,900 points, or 7.9%. Its biggest daily increase ever in point terms, and the biggest percentage gain since the coronavirus swept the globe in March 2020. The technology-heavy NASDAQ composite soared 12.2%, its highest one-day jump since the dot-com era. Some of the day's biggest winners were the Magnificent Seven tech stocks that were badly battered during the tariff sell-off. Shares of NVIDIA rallied 19%, increasing the chipmaker's value by $439.9 billion, the biggest one-day market cap gain for any company on record, according to Dow Jones Market Data. Stocks had spent Wednesday morning wavering between gains and losses as investors fretted about the mounting trade war and watched a troubling sell-off in the U.S. government bond market. The president took to Truth Social shortly after the opening bell with an encouraging message. In all caps, this is a great time to buy, DJT. Trump posted again at 1:18 p.m., giving investors a reason to hit the buy button. More than 75 countries, Trump wrote, have called to negotiate a solution and haven't, at my strong suggestion, retaliated in any way, shape, or form. Because of that, he wrote, I have authorized a 90-day pause and a substantially lowered reciprocal tariff during this period of 10%, also effective immediately. Trump's post, along with coordinated messages from Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent and other administration officials, reassured investors who had feared that Trump's tariffs might become entrenched and usher in a global trade war and recession. Many investors have struggled to discern Trump's primary goal, quickly extract concessions from other countries and declare victory, or build huge protectionist barriers as part of a multi-year quest to restore U.S. manufacturing, an outcome that most economists view as implausible. With the post, Trump appeared to backpedal from the more extreme version of his trade agenda. He criticized the lack of respect that China has shown to the world's markets and said that tariffs on Chinese imports would rise to 125%, effective immediately, before signaling a softer stance toward other countries. In addition to the 90-day pause, Trump said the level of his reciprocal tariffs would now be 10% for many countries, a much lower level than he had promised at his Liberation Day tariff announcement ceremony on April 2nd. He later told reporters that some U.S. companies might be exempted from his tariffs. "We'll take a look at that," the president said. Following the S&P 500's precipitous drop over the past week, the index started Wednesday on the cusp of entering a bear market, defined as a 20% drop from a recent high. Even with the day's gains, it remains 11% below its record set in February. Investors were jittery as Wednesday began because of alarming developments in the all-important U.S. Treasury market. Treasuries have been hit with a wave of selling in recent days, causing an increase in yields, which move inversely to their price. At one point during the overnight hours, the 30-year U.S. Treasury yield hit 5%, a huge jump from below 4.4% last week. Such selling was unusual because normally investors flock to U.S. government bonds during times of market distress. It prompted speculation that foreign investors might be dumping their treasuries, a doomsday scenario that would cast doubt on the U.S.'s status as a global financial superpower. Bond investors got some relief when a government auction for 10-year treasury notes on Wednesday afternoon was met with strong demand. That was followed within minutes by Trump's announcement, which further stabilized longer-term treasuries. In the end, the 10-year yield settled at 4.41%, while the 30-year yield settled at 4.79%, retreating from their highs for the day. Still, the dynamics of recent days, which have also included a decline in the dollar, have raised questions about the central role that U.S. Treasuries play in markets, said Eric Weissman, chief economist and portfolio manager at MFS Investment Management. "The market is trying to figure out, is this just a very gradual kind of decline in the safety of treasuries, or is this a more wholesome paradigm shift where you don't consider treasuries to be an obvious safe haven?" Weissman said. And continuing on page one for the next article, "Why Trump blinked on tariffs just hours after they went into effect." And it's written by Annie Linsky, Josh Dossey, and Meredith McGraw. President Trump finally blinked. It took a week for the plunge into the stock and bond markets, along with a sustained campaign by executives, lawmakers, lobbyists, and foreign leaders to prompt Trump to roll back for 90 days a major element of his sweeping tariff plan. The president said that the reaction to the tariffs was getting a bit yippy, like a nervous athlete unable to perform, and he relied on his instincts to change course as he watched the bond market tank and listened to business leaders, including J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon, express fears of a recession. The episode was classic Trump. He took a drastic action, closely tracked the reaction, kept advisors and allies guessing, and then changed course. In this case, the extraordinary reversal was announced via Trump's social media platform just hours after so-called reciprocal tariffs officially went into effect. He tapped out the post in the Oval Office as he sat with Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent and Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick. Trump also significantly raised tariffs on China. Shortly after Trump published his post, as markets rose, Bessent stood outside the entrance to the West Wing and explained that the move to pause some of the tariffs was discussed Sunday when the two men met. "He and I had a long talk," Bessent said before a crowd of reporters. "This was his strategy all along." Bessent was flooded with worried calls from Wall Street over the weekend and felt strongly he had to persuade Trump that a pause was needed. "It wouldn't be a capitulation," Bessent argued, "because they were going to have so many deals." He revealed little publicly about why the president and his team waited until Wednesday afternoon to enact it, with Trump saying that he decided on the move Wednesday morning. Besant said more than 75 countries have reached out seeking a deal to ease tariffs, with Japan at the front of the queue. One key to the change, Trump's decision to give Besant more authority within his team of trade advisors, people close to the discussion said, along with the talks on Sunday. Besant flew down Sunday to Florida and afterward was authorized to make comments publicly about deals, which heartened many people close to Trump who believed the Treasury Secretary could find an exit ramp. When the two men returned to Washington together Sunday on Air Force One, Besant encouraged Trump to focus on negotiations, according to a person familiar with the conversation. A senior Treasury official said that the administration was unified behind Trump's strategy to promote American economic and national security. Another factor that made Trump more willing to relent on the tariffs, a person who talked to him said, was that so many countries are in negotiations with the administration. Trump was also swayed by the stock market and the parade of business leaders expressing concerns about the tariffs. Over the past few days, executives and lobbyists had flooded White House Chief of Staff Susie Wiles' phone, according to a person close to her. A White House aide noted that it was standard for the president's chief of staff to field calls on his behalf. The message delivered to Trump and his top advisors by chief executives was they needed to find an off-ramp. Trump played his cards close to his vest. He told advisors he was willing to take pain, a person who spoke to him on Monday said. He privately acknowledged that his trade policy could trigger a recession, but said he wanted to be sure it didn't cause a depression, according to people familiar with the conversations. Banking executives, frustrated at their apparent lack of influence with administration officials, turned to Republican lawmakers in recent days to lobby Trump on the tariffs, according to people familiar with the matter. Their message was that Trump was going to tank the economy. Trump was also in listening mode. Over the past few days, he has been asking friends and advisors about the markets, and he indicated he was closely watching them. At the White House on Wednesday, he had lunch with financier and investor Charles Schwab and met with Michigan Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer, who had warned that Michigan was already feeling the impact of the tariffs throughout its automotive industry, events that came after his decision but signaled he was widely gathering input. On Tuesday evening, Trump said that he absorbed the bad news about a plummeting bond market. "I saw last night where people were getting a little queasy," Trump said Wednesday about the bond market. Trump, an avid consumer of cable news, said that he watched Diamond's interview Wednesday morning with Maria Bartiromo on Fox Business. During the interview, Diamond said a recession was a likely outcome of the new tariff program, but also defended the idea of some tariffs as a way to improve trade. He urged the president to give Besant time to make deals. "I'm taking a calm view, but it could get worse," Diamond said. Diamond hasn't had a substantive conversation with Trump for years, people familiar with the matter said. While his appearance on the Fox Business show had been in place for some time, Diamond knew that Trump and his inner circle often watched Fox and that his message would likely get through to them, one of the people said. Trump told reporters Wednesday he had been thinking about pausing tariffs over the last few days, adding, "It probably came together early this morning, fairly early this morning." He said he didn't consult with lawyers for the wording of his announcement and instead relied on input from Besant and Lutnick. "We wrote it up from our hearts," Trump said. "We didn't want to hurt countries that don't need to be hurt, and they all want to negotiate." During the day Wednesday, top administration officials were fanned out to meet with lawmakers, betraying little about the announcement to come. U.S. Trade Representative Jameson Greer was testifying about the tariffs before the House Ways and Means Committee when Trump announced the reversal. About 20 minutes after Trump made the announcement, Representative Stephen Horsford, Democrat of Nevada, finally brought up the shift, asking if Greer was aware of the pause. "I am, yes," said Greer. "I understand the decision was made a few minutes ago. It's been under discussion." Horsford grew angry. "This is amateur hour," he said. "It needs to stop. How are you in charge of negotiations if the president is tweeting about this from wherever the hell he is?" Besant pulled out of a lunch event Wednesday with the Republican Study Committee, the largest conservative caucus in Congress, shortly before the announcement was made. members of the caucus learned on their way to the event that Besant was called into a meeting with Trump and his deputy would attend in his place. Those who have watched Trump for years weren't surprised by the turn of events. Trump used his social media platform to make encouraging comments about the stock market Wednesday morning. "Be cool," in all caps. "Everything is going to work out well," he posted at 9:33 a.m. Eastern Time Wednesday. Again in all caps, "This is a great time to buy," !!!! DJT. Trump posted at 9:37 a.m. Wednesday. An administration official said no decision had been made at that point. How illogical this strategy was became apparent, not just in the markets, but also with expectations of deeper cuts across the economy, said Mark Short, who was chief of staff to former Vice President Mike Pence. "He's a careful studier of the markets, and he talks to a lot of people outside the White House, too," Short said. Besant and other White House aides cast Trump's move as part of a negotiating strategy where Trump took a maximalist approach to force the world to the bargaining table. They noted that China was singled out for increased tariffs because Beijing retaliated against the U.S. Outsiders who had been alarmed about the tariffs were quick to reinforce the White House's new message. "This was brilliantly executed by @RealDonaldTrump, said Bill Ackman, who had been critical of Trump in recent days. Textbook, Art of the Deal. You're listening to The Wall Street Journal on Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Kent, and I'm a volunteer reader. Did you know if you miss any part of this program, you can get it on demand on our website at sunsounds.org, which is in the business and finance section of the paper, and it's entitled "Airlines' Dreams of a Banner Year Are Clouded by Trade Battle," and it's written by Allison Sider. Just about everything has been going wrong for airlines this year. A tariff pause and stock market rebound provided some of the relief company executives sought. Delta Airlines on Wednesday ditched its full-year financial outlook and said it was too soon to say how air travel demand would play out. The company intends to reduce growth and pare its flight schedule in the second half of the year as it confronts lackluster appetite for domestic leisure and business travel. The mounting pessimism marked an about-face for Delta, which predicted 2025 would be its best financial year ever. It could also serve as a harbinger for financial reports from other carriers due this month. "It looks like at the present time, growth has stalled," Chief Executive Ed Bastian said. Bastian said the Trump administration's approach to tariffs has created a chaotic period, which is what we're going through right now. On a conference call with analysts and investors, Bastian added, "I'm hopeful that sanity will prevail." Trump on Wednesday afternoon announced a 90-day pause on certain tariffs to most countries. The pause sent stocks soaring Wednesday, lifting the airlines from the doldrums experienced in recent weeks. Delta shares rose 23% Wednesday, while United Airlines rose 26% and American Airlines rose 23%. Still, airlines' challenges have mounted. Consumers are putting off travel bookings because they have grown uneasy about rising prices and economic weakness. Government travel has plummeted amid the cost-cutting drive in Washington, and lucrative corporate bookings have slowed. Carriers have lost pricing power, and fares have started coming down, a move aimed at nudging people into seats from the sidelines. Trump's U.S. trade policies have dampened cross-border travel from Canada, and European governments have updated advisories about America's border policies. Concerns about President Trump's tariff plan have sent beleaguered airline shares down further over the past week. "It's starting to look like, no, it's not just a temporary trend," said Erica Moore, president of travel management firm World Travel, Inc., referring to weakened demand. "This is starting to pick up a snowball effect." In a survey from Future Partners released this week, nearly 70% of travelers said they would expect to make at least one adjustment to their travel behavior in the next 6 months due to concerns about the economy. Those measures, among the over 4,000 people surveyed, included traveling less frequently, shortening trips, canceling them altogether, or other cost-cutting measures. airline executives have said demand has been more resilient from affluent customers who pay top dollar for premium seats and take long-haul international trips. The question is whether that will remain the case if a softening economy makes broad numbers of consumers feel worse off. We're watching closely. We haven't seen it yet, Delta President Glenn Hauenstein said on the conference call. Airlines, including American and Southwest, last month warned that the first quarter was shaping up to be weaker than they had anticipated. Analysts expect carriers will have to revisit their rosy forecasts. Still, Delta said Wednesday that it expects solid profitability in 2025 and that it would provide more details once air travel market conditions become clearer. Delta's pledge to curtail growth and executives' comments that premium and international travel are holding up also reassured anxious investors who had feared a more dire outlook. Airlines are holding out hope for a busy summer, which tends to be their strongest season. We've definitely seen a consumer that is clearly being a little more cautious about how they're spending their money, said Andrew Levy, CEO of budget airline startup Avalo Airlines. I feel good about summer, but I know it's way too early to feel really good about it. Some consumers are sticking to their plans. Bill Mitchell and his wife still aim to take a cruise around Europe's Dalmatian and Amalfi coasts, even if it means not looking at a stock portfolio. I did briefly think, well, maybe I ought to back off on this since we're not sure what's going to happen and what my IRAs are going to look like, said Mitchell, 76 years old. I'm not getting any younger. If I'm going to do it, I'd better do it fairly quickly. Jed Meyer was out of work for part of last year and said even though he had a new job, he wanted to be cautious. I've been sitting on my hands and not planning as much for summer or the latter part of the year because I don't know what's going to happen, he said. Uncertain about how much he will be flying and fed up with an increased annual fee, Meyer canceled an airline credit card that gave him access to airport lounges. If I was feeling great about last year, I could stomach it, Meyer said. And continuing in business and finance for the next article, how Elon Musk rescued X from the brink. And it's written by Lauren Thomas, Alexander Sadie, and Peter Rudiger. A crowd of investors gathered at Morgan Stanley's New York office to hear X's sales pitch, eager to get a piece of debt that Wall Street had once shunned. Cell phones were a no-go at the January event, and the audience was told to stay seated until ex-chief executive Linda Yaccarino and others had left the room after brief remarks and without taking audience questions. Banks had planned to sell $3 billion in bonds at 95 cents per dollar, but ended up selling more than $10 billion at even higher prices. It was a testament to X's ability to bring advertisers back to the platform, helped in no small part by owner Elon Musk's proximity to President Trump. Also underpinning the debt sale was the possibility that X would one day merge with a hotter, ascendant company, Musk's XAI. In private meetings with Wall Street, ex-executives said there was a good chance that the social media platform might eventually merge with Musk's artificial intelligence company, which makes the Grok chatbot. The billionaire has said he never lost money for investors, but for a long time it looked like he was going to with X. After Musk bought it in 2022, advertisers fled over content moderation concerns, and its loan soured as revenue fell. A month after he took over, Musk said the company, formerly known as Twitter, was on the verge of bankruptcy. Then, late last month, Musk posted on X that he was merging the company with XAI in a deal that valued the newly combined company at more than $100 billion. Folding X into a larger company competing in a global race to develop sophisticated generative AI tools could open the door to raising money at a valuation considered impossible just a few years ago. The merger caps a string of events, some strategic, others fortuitous, that helped Musk announce a deal before Trump's tariffs effectively closed the market for deals. It also moves Musk closer to his longtime goal of turning X into an everything app where people can share news, pay their bills, and entertain themselves. The combined company is initially focused on more tightly embedding xAI's chatbot, Grok, into X, making it more central to the app experience, similar to how Google integrated AI features atop Search, a person familiar with the matter said. A spokesman for X declined to comment, and a spokesman for xAI didn't respond to requests for comment. Musk borrowed $13 billion to complete his 2022 take private of Twitter, and the loans quickly went bad when advertisers paused their spending. He tried to persuade concerned brands to return, at one point offering steep discounts and threatening advertisers they would lose verification if they didn't spend enough. The company's revenue fell to $3 billion in 2023 from about $4.6 billion the previous year, according to people familiar with the matter. And by early 2023, asset manager Fidelity valued the company at roughly a third of what Musk paid for it. X got a boost from xAI, the startup that Musk founded in the spring of 2023 to compete with OpenAI, a firm he left after a power struggle. X received a 25% stake in the new company as compensation for supplying it with the chips and other crucial hardware needed to build AI models. Those shares quickly became one of the most valuable assets on X's balance sheet as the startup's valuation rocketed. Then, last year, Musk grew closer to Donald Trump, taking on a prominent role in his campaign. That proximity to Trump helped persuade some advertisers to return. While X's revenue dropped again in 2024 to about $2.6 billion, it ticked up in the final quarter of the year, according to people familiar with the matter. The company aggressively cut costs. Musk and his advisors had long thought about bringing X and xAI together, but after the election, those plans accelerated, according to people familiar with the matter. To do that, they knew they would have to successfully execute several transactions in the right order and get a little lucky. With Musk ascendant after the election, X took a new approach to ginning up new ad spending. In December, a lawyer from X called a lawyer at advertising conglomerate Interpublic Group, hinting that its recently announced $13 billion deal to merge with rival Omnicom Group could face trouble from the Trump administration, given Musk's powerful role, the Wall Street Journal previously reported. IPG signed a new annual deal with X for potential client spending. Other advertisers started to raise their spending, including Amazon.com, in January. The narrative around X's fortunes was changing rapidly, and Musk saw an opportunity to sell billions of dollars of X debt that were once unappealing. Those loans had sat on banks' balance sheets for more than 2 years, and some had marked them at close to 60 cents on the dollar. Investors, including PIMCO and Citadel, agreed to buy $5.5 billion in loans at 97 cents on the dollar, far more than the $3 billion banks had planned to sell. They sold a further $4.7 billion at 100 cents on the dollar. By then, X and xAI were increasingly intertwined. X held a 10% stake in xAI, diluted from 25% by capital raises, and the AI company pays hundreds of millions of dollars to the social media company to train its models off X's data, according to a person familiar with the matter. It had been crucial to helping X pay its bills. The idea of bringing the two together made ever more sense, according to people close to the deal. X's growing cash flows from returning advertisers meant that xAI could use that money to help fund much-needed investments in data centers, people familiar with the matter said. The groundwork had also been laid internally. Musk had appointed a number of employees as dual employees of X and xAI, including two engineering executives who he announced in January. Then, in early March, X raised roughly $900 million from new and existing investors at a valuation just above its initial takeover price. The raise had reset the value of the company, putting it more in line with where it sat when Musk took Twitter private. Just before the merger was announced, Musk spoke at a summit organized by J.P. Morgan's global technology banking chair, Madhu Namburi, in Big Sky, Montana, reflecting on the early days after he acquired Twitter. He boasted to a crowd that included Ivanka Trump, former Alphabet CEO Larry Page, OpenAI CEO Sam Altman, and Trump crypto czar David Sacks, that X's valuation was higher than when he bought it and that the company was much more profitable. He compared the tough cuts he had to make to his current work in the Department of Government Efficiency, according to the people in attendance. Musk announced the merger with a post on X on March 28, saying it valued XAI at $80 billion and X at $33 billion, excluding debt. This is just the beginning, he wrote. Next, we'll turn to the Heard on the Street column today, which is entitled, Trump U-Turn Halts the Sell Everything American Trade, But the Fallout Remains. And the column is written by John Sindrew. The Trump administration has insisted that it wouldn't be deterred from tariffs by the stock market, but a simultaneous decline in equities, bonds, and the currency may have done the trick. Still, Trump's sudden reversal doesn't mean all the damage will be quickly undone. On Wednesday, the S&P 500 skyrocketed following President Trump's announcement of a 90-day pause on certain tariffs to most countries. The change in direction came after a market rout that quickly spread from stocks to other asset classes, particularly the all-important Treasury market. Bonds initially rallied after the unveiling of Liberation Day tariffs on April 2nd, but have been under pressure for the past few sessions. The sell-off intensified late on Tuesday and overnight. At one point, the yield on the 10-year note rose as high as 4.47%. Yields rise when bond prices fall. What made this even more concerning is that the U.S. dollar also headed lower as the market switched to a sell-everything-American mode reminiscent of what sometimes happens to emerging economies. Now, investors can at least get relief from the knowledge that there is some level of market distress that could change the course of U.S. economic policy. It echoes the experience of Britain in 2022, when short-lived Prime Minister Liz Truss was forced to reverse her economic policies after markets seized up. Still, it is notable that Wednesday's snapback in the S&P 500 didn't spread everywhere else to the same extent. The Wall Street Journal Dollar Index, which measures the greenback against a basket of other currencies, did edge back a bit, but it was still lower relative to a day earlier. And 10-year Treasury yield still hovered above 4.3%, compared with below 4.2% on April 2nd. Even before things took a turn for the worse, Wall Street analysts had been caught off guard by several of the market's reactions. Rather than rise against most major currencies immediately after the tariffs, the dollar actually fell. And long-term Treasury yields remained stubbornly high, which is odd. If tariffs are bad for the economy, they should eventually lead to lower interest rates. Yet the disorderly selling spree that started Tuesday was scarier. The difference, or spread, between bond yields and rates on interest rate swaps, which are another way to trade where rates are expected to be in the future, suddenly widened. Tellingly, this was more pronounced among short-term maturities. Yields on one-year Treasury bills bounced back, even as swaps pointed to interest rates going lower. Much of that spread narrowed again later on Wednesday, but short-term bond yields remain higher than they were on April 2nd, even though they had initially gone down significantly, reflecting the belief that the Federal Reserve would cut rates several times over the next year. Such signs of forced selling may point the finger at hedge funds, which in recent years have engaged in large leveraged bets on treasuries through something known as the basis trade. This entitled buying the bonds while selling similar futures to asset managers. The goal was to make money from the small spread between both contracts. As the market turmoil of March 2020 showed, these trades can unwind quickly and place the Treasury market under big stress, particularly if hedge funds are doing this because dealer banks, as a result of stricter regulations, no longer have the balance sheet capacity to absorb too many bonds when things go south. The swap spread widening suggests this is still the case. However, that the dollar isn't gaining on the back of higher bond yields and an equity rebound underscores that the confidence of foreign investors isn't restored merely by a tariff pause. They are no longer just selling U.S. stocks because of fears of a recession or a loss of long-term productivity in the American economy. They are now dumping safer assets, too. it still seems unlikely that large foreign holders, such as the Chinese government, which has about $800 billion in treasuries, are dumping them as part of their retaliation against tariffs, or the moves would likely be even larger. Also, the possibility of a full-on financial crisis hasn't reared its head, otherwise short-term funding markets would have frozen up. Small signs of stress have appeared, but remained contained. Even if the financial plumbing were to eventually crack, the Fed would almost certainly step in. Ultimately, the U.S. isn't an emerging market. But kicking the can down the road in regards to the trade war may deliver only so much relief to the market, not the least because the negative impact that uncertainty is having on firms and consumers across the global economy is far from resolved. Wednesday's reversal has bolstered the market's confidence that it has the power to stop a worst-case scenario. A sustained rebound may need a bit more than that. And turning now to the op-ed section of the paper for the lead editorial today, which is entitled, "Trump Blinks on Tariffs Again for Now," and it's written by the editorial board. President Trump says trade wars are easy to win. Investors think otherwise, and on Wednesday, Mr. Trump decided maybe investors are right. After a flight from U.S. assets and a rout in the bond market, Mr. Trump announced a pause for 90 days on the worst of his liberation tariffs on most countries, China excepted. Markets celebrated with a stock market rally on hope that perhaps Mr. Trump isn't entirely oblivious to the damage he's causing. The rout in dollar assets reversed, at least somewhat, and the rise in the benchmark 10-year Treasury yield eased. It would be hard to find better evidence that markets believe the biggest threat to the world economy is Mr. Trump's tariffs. The bond rout was scary, with the 10-year yield hitting 4.47% at one point Wednesday, capping the steepest three-day yield climb since 2001. This was accompanied by a decline in the dollar against a basket of currencies. The fire sale on treasuries and the dollar sent a warning about a loss of confidence in Washington. Investors are demanding higher yields to hold even safe treasuries, which is the opposite of what usually happens in financial panics. The pause is a partial reprieve, but hardly an end to the tariff mayhem. For one thing, the administration can't get its story straight. Mr. Trump's pause came not long after Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent told bankers the economy is in pretty good shape. He dismissed the bond rout as normal trading, but then why the tariff pause? Mr. Trump is also escalating his trade war with China, the world's second-largest economy. He started the latest row with a 34% tariff on top of tariffs already in place, and China responded Tuesday with the same. Mr. Trump then added 50% more for a total U.S. tariff of 104% on Chinese goods. Beijing hit back again with 50% more, or 84% on all American exports to China, plus multiple regulatory barriers set to hit U.S. companies. Mr. Trump then lifted his China tariffs to 125%. This is the closest the two economies have come to a full economic decoupling since China began to rejoin the global trading system in the 1980s. Chinese mercantilism poses unique trade challenges, but rapid decoupling isn't possible without considerable economic harm. U.S. importers from China will have to raise prices or find other suppliers if they exist. Beijing has some scope to mitigate the damage to its economy via hefty subsidies to households and producers, but such measures will be costly and can't last forever. Washington can't rule out the danger that Beijing will attempt to use a political or military threat, perhaps a blockade of Taiwan or seizure of islands under Taiwan's control, to force Mr. Trump to the table on trade. If decoupling from China is Mr. Trump's goal, one way to mitigate the damage is by expanding trade with allies. But Mr. Trump's tariffs slam friend and foe alike. Mr. Trump's pause could give the administration time to negotiate trade deals with many of his targets, but he's not pausing his 10% base tariff on most countries. Who knows what Mr. Trump really intends, and it isn't clear he even knows. he's still fixated on erasing the U.S. trade deficit with nearly every individual nation, which makes no sense given the differences in economies. His 90-day pause means the tariffs could come back with a vengeance if he doesn't like the concessions countries offer. For businesses, this means more uncertainty, which means continuing delays in capital investment crucial for growth. Consumers will still feel pain because companies price inventory on replacement cost, not average cost, so tariffs are already hitting prices. Delta Airlines on Wednesday announced a reduction in its capital spending as it said consumers are flying less. Walmart and other companies have withdrawn previous earnings guidance on consumer uncertainty. J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon said he now expects a recession. Oh, and the European Union imposed retaliatory tariffs on American exports worth 22 billion euros, and Brussels may go further. You can see why this is causing investors to rethink their confidence in the U.S. economy. There will always be a market for treasuries, but the question is, at what price? Mr. Trump's reckless trade policies risk raising the cost of borrowing, inevitably triggering concerns about liquidity and the potential for nasty surprises in capital markets from companies caught by sharp moves in currencies or bonds. Other governments are worried enough that Tokyo is talking about a global effort to bolster financial stability. The U.S. would normally lead this effort, but this time the turmoil is caused by the U.S. Never bet against America, it said, and normally global investors don't want to. It's a sign of the magnitude of Mr. Trump's tariff mistake that he's goading them into doing so. He needs a policy reversal, not a pause. And finally this morning, we'll go back to page one to read the A-head column in the paper, today entitled, Are E-Bikes a Godsend or the Road to Perdition? An Amish Community is Torn, and it's written by Scott Calvert. Dateline, Berlin, Ohio. Electric bikes have become ubiquitous in the world's second-largest Amish settlement, routinely flying past the horse-drawn buggies that have trundled across the hilly countryside here for two centuries. Not everyone is rolling with it. The angst voiced by some Amish isn't about the motors that propel e-bikes to nearly 30 miles an hour. It's about the mobility the bikes enable and the implications of that independence. We could easily end up with not having many Amish people around anymore, said Mart Miller, a 67-year-old market worker who is the bishop of a church district akin to a parish that rejects e-bikes. Many Amish e-bike enthusiasts, by contrast, see them as tools to make life easier without harming the insular Christian society known for its plain dress, prohibition of cars, and wariness of new technology. The bikes have transformed the community of more than 40,000 people in and around Holmes County. Men, women, and teenagers are on the go from before dawn to after dark, often pulling children in trailers. Charging stations abound at businesses alongside hitching posts. For me, e-bikes are a good balance. We recognize the accessibility that we need in today's world to live well, to preserve our faith, family, and community, said Marcus Yoder, who directs the Amish and Mennonite Heritage Center here. Lou Ann Yoder, no relation to Marcus, rides her silver e-bike almost daily. It gets her to and from work, meetups with friends, grocery stores, even her doctor 13 miles away. On weekends, she and her family hit the roller coastery roads, chatting over Bluetooth helmets. During winter, she wears ski goggles, heated gloves, and a heated vest. I go all over the place, the 46-year-old cafe manager said, pointing out features of her retrofitted pedal bike, such as the handlebar throttle and a new battery range of around 40 miles. The ability to travel so far solo is precisely what distresses many Amish. E-bikes lack the range and speed of cars, but they can whisk teenagers to distant places without parental oversight, critics say, and pull married women away from the home. The net effect in this view is reduced family togetherness. It's going to wreak havoc within the God-ordained family structure, said Matt Klein, 41, a fence builder and minister in its church district. Some also fear e-bikes will send riders down a slippery slope to car driving, a red line in Amish eyes. People are going to get the idea that this does not make any sense. I can get there so fast, I might as well take a car, said Jerry Miller, 58, a dairy farmer, plumber, and church deacon. The power source isn't the problem, he said. Though the Amish avoid the electric grid to maintain distance from the wider world, many use natural gas and solar energy to run appliances. The sticking point with technology, Miller said, is how it affects the family and community. While tensions have simmered in parts of the community, people on both sides of the e-bike divide emphasize their respect for those with divergent views. Over a quarter of the members belong to church districts that bar all bikes, local experts say. Some two-thirds are old order, and those districts mostly allow e-bikes. The rest largely identify as new order, where pedal bikes are permitted, but not electric. E-bike sales took off in 2016, said Joe Mast, owner of Mount Hope Bicycle. It just kind of went wild, he said. Then everybody wanted them. They now account for about 95% of his sales, typically costing $1,000 to $3,000. Mast, 52, who is old order, said he has scant concern about e-bikes. I think the Bible tells us to kind of adjust to the times, he said. Leon Miller, owner of Countryside Bicycles, who belongs to a New Order church, sold some e-bikes early, but now happily stocks only the people-powered kind, despite the hit to his bottom line. I have enough to make a living, Miller said. Where some older Amish see e-bikes as a threat, younger generations see opportunity, said Arlen Kaufman. The 40-year-old, who is part owner of a family-run business that bends wood, and said the bikes quickly pay for themselves, replacing expenses like the $100 round-trip taxi to Walmart. On a recent morning in Berlin, Deb Hochstetler, 36, popped into Walnut Creek Cheese and Market to buy tomatoes for her lunch at her children's school. She contemplated e-bikes while unhitching the horse that lugs her black buggy. Sometimes I would really like one, just to get somewhere really quick, she said. But then, on the second hand, I think I would be so busy I would go away a lot more, and I would like to be at home too. A mile away at Troyer Market, Deborah Bowman, 27, loaded two children and groceries onto her e-bike and trailer. Buggy rides offer quality family time and are core to Amish life, she said, but the e-bike is far more convenient. Then she zipped down Country Road 77 toward home 4 miles away. And that concludes my light reading of the Wall Street Journal for Thursday, April 10th, 2025. My name is Kent, and I am a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. It has been a pleasure reading to you today. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more interesting programs here on Sun Sounds.